At Exact Sciences, we're on a mission to outsmart cancer. Through our growing portfolio of genomic tests, we are helping to enable more informed, intelligent, and individualized oncology decisions. Insights from the Oncotype DX Breast Recurrence Score Test, the OncoExTra Test, and more are changing how cancer is treated for more than 1.5 million patients. See how we're enabling the next era of personalized cancer care at precisiononcology.exactsciences.com.
This summer, enjoy less sunscreen smell and more new car smell. Make room for more than just memories with a Lexus SUV. Find offers on select SUVs at the Lexus Golden Opportunity Sales Event.
Lease the 2025 NX250 all-wheel drive for $529 a month for 36 months with $39.99 due at signing.
Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
Call 1-800-USA-LEXUS for important lease offer and pricing details. Not all customers will qualify. Offer available in the Eastern area only in September 3rd, 2024.
Hello, everybody, and this is Stacy from The Advisor. Today, I'm very excited because we have a very special author here today. It's Mary Tadeau, and she is just an amazing individual. She writes children's books, and she has a children's book that she just recently launched, and it's beautiful. And she talks about how to keep the planet magical, and she's going to tell you what she means by that. And she's just an amazing person with just an amazing concept about the environment, about children, about keeping the world a magical place to live in. And she's going to tell you all about herself and everything else that we just mentioned. Mary, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. I'm honored to have you, speak today on our show. And, tell everybody a little about yourself and what you do.
Well, great. Thank you for the opportunity, Stacey. I'm very excited to be here as well. I'm a mom, and they're adults now, but, I'm still a mom. And besides that, for a career, I'm an engineer. I'm a civil engineer. I specialize in water resources, and for a while, I managed different parts of the water infrastructure. And then more recently, I've been a consultant for water environment policy and program and pollution prevention more broadly. We have a lot of environmental issues. And I was inspired to write a children's book. It's called A Tale of Two Planets. Just because we really need to, appreciate our planet and how magic it is, what it does for us without us thinking about it. And appreciation inspires gratitude, which relieves stress. And it's just, I think, a first step in really coming to terms with some of the things that we maybe have to do to try and protect our planet more. And if we really appreciate our planet, then it's not a task. It's not, I have to drive less, or I have to plant native plants, or whatever, whatever it is. It's not a burden anymore. It's like, wow, I really want to do this for our amazing planet. It's a different mindset. So kids have a natural sense of wonder. They just innately connect with the planet. And so it was really fun, actually, to write a kid's book.
And what was your inspiration that really motivated you to want to write this children's book?
Well, it was appreciation and just realizing how magic our planet is. So the book, The Two Planets, there's a planet called Rhetha, which is Earth all mixed up, and things don't work on that planet. I was thinking, well, what if we lived on a planet where the wind didn't blow by itself, or water didn't flow to the rivers and the oceans by itself? And what if leaves didn't make nutrients for more plants, or what if plants didn't grow their own pollen? All of these things that our planet just does for us. Right. We don't think about it. And if we don't think about it, then we don't really appreciate it. And so really the inspiration was just awe for like my personal awe for the planet and appreciation of the beauty and the interconnectedness. Like the we think of it as all these separate parts, or at least I guess that's the science mind, right? We like to sort of compartmentalize things and analyze them and figure them out, but just because we think of it as separate parts, it doesn't mean it is. It's one whole interconnected thing. And so the book just talks about how things are all interconnected, like in a kind of a straightforward way. And also how even though these little aliens are called Wooshidoos, which is a word I got from my youngest son. He used to talk mm-hmm. about aliens, and he said Wooshidoos, and I said, what's a Wooshidoo? And he goes, well, you know, the aliens. And I go, okay, that's so awesome. So the Wooshidoos, the Wooshidoos on Rita, even though they have to do all of these things to keep their planet working and to make it habitable, they love their planet. They really appreciate it. And when they read about Earth, the magic planet, they laugh because they don't believe it's real. Nothing that magic could possibly be real.
I love that. I love that. You know, it is, you know, I think we take for granted, you know, our planet. We were talking about this earlier, but, you know, it is a magical place, you know, because when you think about it, there's everything that it has been created on planet Earth, you know, is here for a reason. And if we didn't have one thing, something else couldn't function properly. And we really need everything in order to function as a whole planet, you know, and to keep the animals alive, to keep the people alive. And you know, it's something that, you know, I think it's important that people understand is that, you know, we really, in order to keep everything healthy, we really need to take care of our planet. And, you know, for years, we haven't really, you know, cared for our planet as well as we should. You know, for you being a civil engineer and being in the area focusing on water, you know, what have you seen, you know, and some of those changes, you know, with the environment, you know, from where it was and how it is now?
Yeah, well, part of the problem is we think of ourselves as separate, you know, from the planet, and we're actually part of it. And so a lot of my work is in urban areas. And if you think of the amount of water that a tree holds, you know, if you've ever been camping and try mm-hmm. to burn wet wood, you know, there's a lot of water in a tree. And so when we change, you know, from a field or a forest to an urban area, a lot of people think of urban areas, urban waters being polluted. And there, you know, obviously there is pollution that runs off the streets and that kind of thing. But the other change is the volume. So it's not only the quality, it's the quantity of water. And so when you see rain running off an urban street, for example, it most places it doesn't go to a treatment anywhere. It goes right into a river or a creek. And, you know, if somebody threw, you know, those big bags of milk, I don't know if we get bags of milk in Canada. If somebody okay. threw 3 liters, you know, or a gallon of water at you and you had to catch it, it's very heavy, you know, it has a lot of momentum. Yes. And we think of all of that water that's going down the street, going into the sewer and storm sewer and into a creek, it just blows out the, you know, the walls of the creek and the fish and the other animals, the bugs that live in a creek. They evolve with a certain velocity, a certain speed of the water and a certain quantity of water. And
right.
a storm will change all of that in an urban area. So, and it's warmer, you know, if a street is in the summer, certainly is warm. And you know, we don't have trout and that kind of thing, you know, rainbow trout, for example, in urban streams. And a lot of people assume it's because of pollution, but it's actually temperature. They need cooler water. So okay. even if the water's fairly clean, they just can't survive in an urban environment because the water's too warm. They're cooler, cold water fish. So we, you know, by changing just taking out a few trees fundamentally changes how rivers respond and what creatures can live in the rivers.
You know, I never thought of that. You know, that's, you're so right. Like I would always, when I would see nowadays, especially where I live in New Jersey, you're always seeing reconstruction work done. They're always knocking down trees. They're always trying to, you know, buy out properties and build houses or build shopping centers, blah, 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 blah. And it would make me so upset because I would see them take down such beautiful trees, you know, and, you know, but I never thought of the concept of, let's say there is a stream or there is a water in that area and you do take out those trees, which are making it cooler water. You know, if you take the trees out, then you're going to have warm water. And a lot of those fish that lived in that area are no longer going to be able to survive. And I never thought of it like that, but that makes so much sense. And it shows you how, you know, how serious it is when we knock down trees and when we take, you know, the trees away from our environment.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not only warmer, there's more of it. There's more water to run off. And that volume makes a big difference. So and, you know, we don't think really of urban areas having sort of natural streams because a lot of it is underground. It's sewer systems,
right.
Sewer systems. But no matter where you are on the planet, you're connected to an ocean by water. So whatever mm-hmm. runs off your property, whether, you know, it's a balcony or, you know, you have a big lot or you're a farm, that water, if it doesn't evaporate or, you know, go into the soil or be taken up by a tree, it eventually reaches an ocean. You know, and that's why it's so important. You know, cosmetic pesticides for a green lawn, you know, it's just such a bad idea. I know people love their green lawns, but native plants, they hold more water, they support the insects, which support the birds. You know, generally they can be prettier flowers, mm-hmm. depends on your taste, I guess, but, you know, little things like that, like what you do on your own property, even if it's, you know, putting some flowers on in a basket on a balcony, they capture water,
right.
And they encourage plant growth, which is, you know, we need our pollinators, we need our bugs. And so, you know, what people do in their own space ultimately is part of the oceans, you know, no matter how far away you are. I'm landlocked, you know, there's no ocean close to me, but I'm always thinking about what, you know, and plastics and that kind of thing, like just littering. And, you know, if I see a plastic floating down a river, I think, oh my goodness, that could end up from where I am up in the Atlantic Ocean.
Right. Well, you know, even if the plastic is heated, there are so many toxins that come out of that piece of plastic. And if it's in the water and you have the sun rain on the plastic in the water, it's going to contaminate the water and bring toxins into the water as well. And we already have a big problem where, you know, in the United States, they did a study. And a lot of the bottled waters that they tested, which were really well-known names that were supposed to be quote unquote pure water and purified water, had toxins in them. Even the best ones that were highly rated still had toxins in them. So, you know, it shows, you know, how us not taking care of our planet, you know, affects, you know, and then, you know, affects us as a whole. And how it actually, you know, people are drinking these waters and what is it doing to their bodies, you know, and if they drink those waters in those bottles for a long period of time, what is it going to do in the long run? You know, people don't think about these things. So it's hurting animals, you know, and it's hurting human beings at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. And those plastics, you know, whether it's a bottle or a film of some kind, you know, a wrapper, they break up into smaller pieces. You know, with wind and erosion, or they hit rocks as they sort of flow down the stream. And the smaller they become, some plastics actually attract chemicals so that when they're ingested by, you know, a fish or whatever, even if they're small, they're carrying a toxic load that you wouldn't expect. It's not just from the plastic, it's from other contaminants in the water that can adhere to the plastic. So
right.
It's kind of a double whammy in terms of, you know, ingesting a plastic, but then also ingesting some contaminants that attach onto that plastic. And
right.
You know, we've been washing synthetic since the 1960s. You know, polyesters are basically
yeah.
plastic, and all the little fibers, they don't get treated. You know, we treat wastewater.
Yeah.
Almost all cities in North America anyway have wastewater treatment plants, but they're not designed to remove those microscopic, you know, fibers, plastic fibers. They end up, some of them are removed, but then, you know, they end up in the biosolids or the solid materials. Like the plastic goes somewhere. There's no place such as away. You know, you can't throw plastics away. There is no away. It ends up somewhere and it stays for years and years and years.
Wow.
It's chemically stable, which is, I guess, a double-edged sword, right? You
yeah.
want something stable, but you don't want it to last, be around like 1,000 years from now.
Right, 100%. Now with your book, like do children understand, like, because you said it's actually, you know, it was meant for a certain age group, but there is a very, you know, a large age group that really is enjoying this book from very young to, you know, to the tweens, is actually, you know, like they seem to draw really well to the book. And, you know, and even if the children are young, they are attracted by the illustrations and they ask questions. And then you could read the book and explain to the children, you know, and help them learn about the environment also. And, you know, and it's pretty amazing. And when you wrote the book, you know, have you seen, like, what type of responses have you seen from these children or questions that they're bringing over to you?
Yeah. So yeah, I've read the book a number of times in school classes, and to, you know, a few little kids in my life. But in the classes, like the target age is kind of 4 to 8 range. Mm-hmm. And they really, any younger, they like the pictures, but they kind of move around quite a bit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They love the pictures. The target group, they listen very intently to, you know, how the other planet works and then what our planet has. And there's a little alien. So the aliens, they're Wooshidoos. There's one little alien that believes Earth is a real place and finds out some of the answers to the questions in the book. And so that's at the end of the book, where it's, you know, what are the magic animals that carry pollen?
Yes.
That kind of thing. And so when I ask, well, what do you think the message of the book is, or what is the book saying? Right away, the kids will say, oh, we're really lucky to live here, or Earth is a magic place. And I've read it. I didn't know I would be reading it, but I read it in one school to an older group, a grade 5-6 group, which made me a little bit nervous, because, you know, I thought, oh my goodness, these kids are going to be, you know, kind of bored. But they also loved it. And one of the girls said to me, I never thought of Earth as magic. I wish I had thought of it as magic before this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. But they were also interested in talking about, you know, water and a career, like, you know, just my career as an engineer and consultant. So, you know, they moved from the book into, you know, a project they've been doing on water recently. So it transitioned nicely, but they were not bored at all when I read the book. So that was a very pleasant surprise.
You know, it's amazing, but you know, children draw to these things, and so do adults. You know, like there are many times I know many of my friends that who listen to documentaries and they listen to stories that talk about the planet and they talk about the earth, and the water is a remarkable place. You know, the ocean, the rivers, the creeks, the lakes, and there's so many creatures that live in the water. It's just a it's a it's just an it's an amazing place. And we really have to really figure out ways that we can actually focus on keeping it in good condition, so we can live a healthy and structured life, and these animals will have a place to live also. Because if we continue to abuse our waters, in the long run, everyone is going to suffer.
Yeah, we're mostly water. I think we are also water.
Right.
And the thing is, I mean, water is beautiful. Beauty is healing. It's restorative. And this is from my personal experiences, feeling kind of overwhelmed sometimes with all of the problems that we're dealing with. Just taking time to appreciate beauty, and it can be anywhere. You can be anywhere and find it. Look at the sky, or what I mean, different people find beauty in different places. But I think if we do that, if we learn to restore, people working in the environment, people who are concerned about it, if we can rely on it to also restore us. And it's amazing, really. I'm not sure how it works scientifically, and I don't really have to know that. I just know that it re-energizes you, the beauty, and while gratitude, as you've written about, also that there's something restorative about gratitude and awe as well. And kids have that naturally. Like everything's amazing, everything, they can just see it, and that helps parents, I think, connect or reconnect to the beauty. And once you're restored by it, then you're energized again to find out more about it, what you can do. It's less of a burden. It's more you're inspired in a way that if you're just feeling the weight of it, you're dragging your butt around, and it's not sustaining. It's not sustaining yourself, and it's probably not, as effective for the planet either.
And I think books like yours make such an impact, because it's funny, but there are things that just stick with you, and information that just sticks with you. And when you hear a creative story and you hear a really good meaning behind the story, a lot of times people don't realize, but a lot of children don't forget it. They might not remember every single word, but the majority, the main concepts stick in their head, whether it's the illustration or the overall meaning behind the book. And maybe they remember, they might remember the name for the aliens, and it just sticks in their head, and what they learn as a child could actually play through as an adult. And I think that's what's great about your book, is you're teaching them something at a young age that could actually make them change the way they live in the future as they become young adults.
And they can bring their parents along too. That's what happened with smoking, right? They started with the kids, and then the kids went home and said, "Wow, mom, you got to stop smoking." And that changed a lot of people's attitudes towards, that was an issue in the past more than it is now. But now, that connection, there's actually a field. It's not my field of study, but it's eco-psychology, and that connection with just the planet. And there's a local author in the Ottawa Valley where he wrote a book about eco-psychology, and he used to bring kids camping, and just to connect. And he was finding that they would do that. They'd go home very enthusiastic and not have their parents understand what they were talking about. So he started taking whole families out and saying, you know, and then so that it could be an integrated experience for the kids, not just something where it was almost like a conflict for them. You know, they got yeah. it in the experience in when they were, you know, in raw nature, call it, right. with no receptivity, nowhere to kind of latch it onto at home. Yeah. It worked better with the whole family.
Yeah, I think that would definitely be a plus, and, you know, because if the whole family takes part of it, you know, they all learn together, and then they all, you know, as a parent being a mentor, you want to implement these good habits, you know, because as a parent, that's what we do, is we want to teach our children good things. And if you see, you know, you learn about the environment, and you learn how you can care for the environment and help the environment, you know, stay clean and stay strong, you know, the parents can, you know, be the mentors and, you know, implement it. And that's also, I think, builds a common bond between the parent and the child, is that they're both working towards one common goal. And I don't think people realize, but things as simple as your book could actually help a relationship between a child and their parent even grow closer, because they are doing a little project together where they're learning about the environment, they're learning ways they could actually help the environment, and then they're working together towards one common goal, which is very, I think, very beneficial, and it could actually make a family and a relationship stronger, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the parents can take the cue from the kid too. Like if the kid wants to talk about, you know, the environment or the planet, then that's great. Some kids will also want to talk about the imaginary world and let their imagination run. Yeah. You know, and that's fun too, because they can take ownership for what they imagine the planet to be. Like the book covers some of it, but then they're allowed to, they have free rein, you know, to imagine two suns or three moons or, you know, other things that might not work and how they may fix it. You know, and kids, I guess we all learn from our imagination and we create from our imagination. So, you know, and then usually your kids, if they like a book, they want to hear it more than once, and different readings, you know, you can kind of, take it wherever the kid wants to take it, and everybody has fun and learn as well, obviously, but also have fun with it.
Yeah, you know, I remember when my son was young, he loved dinosaurs when he was a child. And so I used to read him stories about dinosaurs, and then I would extend the story and I would go on. And then, you know, I had convinced him through my own story that we had dinosaurs living in our backyard. And he thought they were behind the bushes and the trees. And at night he would run to the window trying to see if he could see them. And it was the cutest thing, you know, so it's fun. And because you're also encouraging your child to use their imagination even more, because, you know, I would go on and I would tell the second half of the book that it wasn't even existent, you know, and then all of a sudden he's running out the door. He had this, you know, thing that, oh my God, there's dinosaurs in our backyard, you know, and he was all excited and he wanted to try to see if he could see one, you know, so it could be a lot of fun, and it shows your children how to use their imagination. And, you know, and that's how you get children to actually, when they go into their careers, some of them are very career based and they are very creative, and they go into careers based on creativity. And you could spur that creativity as a child. And storytelling is a great way to enhance a child's creativity.
Yes. Yeah, it really is. Like this is it's a short book. I have two sons, and when they were a little bit older than, you know, sort of older than 8 or 10, we started reading chapter books. And every once in a while, one of the chapter books there would be a movie, and they would be really mad if the movie ruined their image. You know, they had this whole world in their heads.
Yeah.
And there was a few movies they were quite angry that they didn't do it right.
Right. Well, I always felt like when I read books, I always felt like the books were better than the actual movie. When they tried to make the movie, I always seemed like the characters were not exactly the way I implemented them in my head, or, you know, or they took, you know, they missed a lot of the great, what I thought were the great parts. Cause you knew if you read the whole book, you know exactly what's supposed to be in the movie. You're like, well, they're missing this part. They didn't do this. They didn't do this, you know? So I feel like a book always is much better than the actual movie. It can never be as detailed. It can never be, you know, as good as the movie. And you create your own characters from the descriptions in the books. So I always feel like the books are a much better thing than the actual movie itself. It's easy, just like, you know, to listen to a movie than to read a book. But there's so much more when you read, you know.
Yeah.
You get a lot more, I think, from it.
Yeah, and when you read bedtime stories, I would still be reading bedtime stories to my sons if they would let me. Obviously, they want their adult men, but you know, they're also avid readers. You know, from reading right from a very young age, and it just makes it so much easier to learn. Like when you like to read, and when you're curious about what may be in this book or that book. It just makes, I don't know, it's just enriches your life. There's so many options out there to read, you know, and as you age out of the kids' books, you know, but you're still in school, it's just, it's such a I don't know, not essential, but really, really enriching skill to have an interest in books, I think.
Oh, definitely. And I even feel that when you read books, it also enhances your communication skills, because there are many times when I would have to speak in front of people and I could just stop after, you know, teaching something and go into a story and, you know, just have, you know, the beginning of the story in my head. And then I could just tell a story and then go back to what I was doing. And that would enhance, and that would keep them, you know, engaged in what I had to say, you know. But storytelling is really what keeps people engaged. And the greatest thing is that if you could relate something from a story to your own personal life, it make you automatically have a deep interest in that book, or a deep interest in what you're learning, because, you know, all you need is one little thing that you could relate to, and then it just pulls you right in.
Yeah, it unfolds a whole aspect. I mean, we have a long, long history of storytelling, right? It predates writing even. And there's something about stories and songs. I mean, I would sing, but I can't. So I had to write a kid's book, because that's another way that I think is really fun to connect with kids, is, you know, through music, songs, little rhymes, clean up songs and that kind of thing, right? Where they don't want to clean up, but they want to sing the song. So they'll
right. Well, don't feel bad, because when I used to try to sing, my kids used to put their hand over my mouth. So it basically...
Yeah, we have that experience in common then. Well, know your limits.
Yes, know your limits. Exactly. If people wanted to purchase your book, show your book to everybody, where can they find your book?
So it is on Amazon. I have a Tale of Two Planets.com. So 2TWO, A Tale of Two Planets, the title. Friesen Press, it's published by Friesen Press, Friesen Press. So yeah, a few places. I'm on Instagram at Mary Trudeau Books. I have my company professional website, which I'm sure will bore people, so I won't mention that, for my consulting. I'm on LinkedIn as well. So yeah, probably atale of2planets.com, Amazon. There's a few independent bookstores that have it as well, but that's more local to where I live. So it wouldn't be in New Jersey in a local store.
Well, if it's on Amazon, people can find it all over the world. So that's a great thing. If you had to take today and you wanted to emphasize on some important factors, what would be some things you'd like to emphasize to the listeners today from our conversation?
First of all, enjoy our planet. Like, really, it's so restorative. Beauty is restorative wherever you find that. What you do in your backyard or in your space makes a difference. It's connected. We're all connected globally. And so, you know, reducing chemical use, planting native plants, you know, something that pollinators, a birdhouse, something like that. Like, always know that you can make a difference in your own space, and that cumulatively we will, as we all connect, understanding our that interconnection and that effect, will gradually make a difference and turn things around.
Yes. Yeah, very true. So true. Now, do you think in the future, I know you're not planning it right now, but do you think you might do a second book in the future?
I would, yes, actually. That's an aspirational goal at this point. It might have something to do with water. We'll have to see.
I love it. I love it. Now, is there anything else you'd like to share before we go?
No, it's been a pleasure speaking with you, Stacey. Thanks for the opportunity.
Oh, you're very welcome. This has been a pleasure. I'm so glad you came on the show. I really enjoyed all the information you provided. I love the fact that you wrote this children's book. I love how you're educating children. I love how children are grasping to it and really taking an interest in the environment. And they're doing that through your stories. They're doing that through your illustrations. And, you know, you're really bringing awareness to the younger generation, which is, you know, the people who are going to make a difference in our world, you know, in a short period of time. So, you know, thank you so much for doing that, because it is a very big deal. You know, stories like yours can change, you know, help change the world itself. And like you said, the planet is a magical place. And by educating people, we can keep it magical, you know, and that's the whole point, is to keep the planet magical, and to really, and that only way to do that is to learn how to care for it and bring awareness. And that's what your book is. It's bringing awareness. It's fun. It has a great story. And, you know, I thank you so much for taking the time to create it. Thank you.
No, you're welcome. Thank you.
Well, you have a great day, and it was a pleasure having you on, and I hope maybe in the future we'll have you on again.
I hope so. That would be great. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye. You have a great day.
Thanks. Bye.
Been hungry for some college football? Well, we finally get a taste this weekend. Don't miss any of the action. Jump in at DraftKings Sportsbook. It's a small but mighty slate of games for week zero, including a big matchup in Ireland. This is going to be DraftKings' biggest college football season to date. Plus, all newbies getting into the college spirit, here's something extra special. New DraftKings customers bet $5 to get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Score big with DraftKings all college football season long. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code IHEART. That's promo code IHEART for new customers to get $200 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call the Virginia Problem Gambling Helpline at 888-532-3500. 21 and over. Virginia only. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Deposit and eligibility restrictions apply. Terms at dkng.co/ftball.
A coach who knows the game can teach their team how to improve. But one who genuinely cares about each player,
you have what it takes. We got this.
Can inspire them to win. At Truist, we believe the same is true for banking. Because when you work with someone who knows a lot and cares even more, you're unstoppable. Truist, leaders in banking, unwavering in care. Start feeling unstoppable. Visit Truist.com/care. Truist Bank, member FDIC, leading based on top 10 U.S. commercial bank.